just a baby. Before I could speak, I would line up all my letter blocks alphabetically. Now it's my vocation and my passion to assign every decimal numbered shelf to every decimal numbered spine. I'm alive.
Hello, this is Carrie Sagal with The Library Show, and today with me in Studio Zeno is Sotera Perez. Welcome.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
Well, I'm very excited to have you here. I understand you're one of those readers who has three or four books going at a time.
It's true. I have tried unsuccessfully several times to read a book beginning to end without starting anew, and it's never, ever worked. So,
do you have books for certain locations, like this is your couch book, this is your bathroom book, this is your car book?
I absolutely do. Generally speaking, I have a couple on my nightstand, and then I have a couple in the living room, and then I have one that sort of travels with me. If I have to take a bag somewhere, I have a book that travels with me in my bag.
Do you currently have a traveling book?
My traveling book right now is a biography of Alexander Hamilton, the Rob Chernow biography of Alexander Hamilton.
Well, tell me about that. I'm excited to hear, because it's also part of a national or worldwide phenomenon, too.
So it is actually very interesting that I came to the book. I don't generally read biographies. If I'm going to read nonfiction, I don't read biographies or memoirs. I'll choose travelogues or something else instead. And I came to this because of the musical. The musical came onto my radar because I'm a huge musical fan, and it started bleeding in late last summer that there was this phenomenon happening, and I resisted it for a long time. I'm not going to listen to it. It's probably whatever. People make a fuss about this stuff all the time. And then I saw a clip of it, a GIF actually, and I realized that Hamilton the musical was written by a man named Lin-Manuel Miranda. He's of Puerto Rican extraction. He lives in New York City, and he cast almost all people of color in this story about the American Revolution and the founding of the United States. And it was such an incredible idea to me that I thought, well, now I probably ought to listen to it. And I did, and the music is incredibly compelling. And I should go back and preface this all by saying that Alexander Hamilton has been my favorite founding father since I was in seventh grade. And I actually attempted to read the Federalist Papers when I was in high school. They're a lot more interesting as historical documents than for actual reading. But so
can I interrupt and ask you what was going on in seventh grade that took you along this pathway?
So, seventh grade, I had an American government class, or American history class, I should say. And we got all of this information. When you're in school, you get the party line on the American Revolution, right? Like, this is what happened. These were the major players, blah, blah, blah. And so then they started talking about what happened immediately after the American Revolution. And there's this period of time between the time that we declared our independence in 1776 and when the Constitution was enacted in 1791. And during that time, there was a huge internal struggle between the states and the federal government. There were proponents for each, but Alexander Hamilton happened to be one of the strongest and most powerful voices for a centralized federal government. He and John Jay and James Madison wrote the Federalist Papers. And the thing that was really interesting to me is that the reason that he's on our money, he's the only founding father that's on our money, with the exception of Ben Franklin, who was not an American president. And the reason is because he started the Federal Reserve, and the Federal Reserve was the reason that he wanted a centralized government. He decided that in order to be an economically viable nation that could hold its own, and have longevity, that we needed to have a centralized bank, and we couldn't have a centralized bank without having a federal government, centralized
government. Can I ask you, do you remember this from seventh grade?
Or
do you remember it from the book you're currently reading?
No, that actually was all from seventh grade. As a matter of fact, I was talking with a friend about it when I first started listening to Hamilton, and she said, what's Alexander Hamilton's claim to fame? And I said, he created the Federal Reserve.
Well, that's amazing. The only thing that I remember distinctly from seventh grade is the poetry unit, and I have read poetry since that time, so it did have an impact in the same way that apparently Hamilton had on you. So tell me about the book you're reading, and then I do want to go back to the musical a little bit more.
So the book is actually, it's the biography that inspired Lin-Manuel Miranda to write the musical, and what I'm coming to learn reading this book is that Hamilton was an amazingly compelling person. He died fairly young. He died in a duel. He was only 49 when he died. His son also died in a duel 5 years before he did. His son was 18. But in between the time that he started to rise to prominence and the time that he died, he was just incredibly literate and incredibly erudite, and he accomplished so much in his less than, you know, six decades on earth, and it less than five decades on earth, and he is a complex and interesting character. He is an immigrant. He was born in the Caribbean, and he, within 2 years of moving to the United States at the tender age of 16, he went to Columbia, got kicked out of Columbia, it was then called King's College, joined the American Revolution, and became George Washington's top aide-de-camp.
By the time he was 18.
By the time he was 18 or 19 years old.
Wow, he does sound very interesting. I know very little about him, but I'm learning right here from you. And so, Tara, your ability just to stream off details and weave it into a story is amazing. So the playwright, mm-hmm. or is that what it's called when it's a musical,
yeah.
is inspired by this book and writes this play, which has had a sort of a phenomenon going on. I only know it through headlines. Huffington Post headlines about fans upset because they can't get tickets. Maybe you can talk about that a little bit and tell me what is the play? What is the musical?
Well, so like I said, Lin-Manuel Miranda was inspired by Rob Chernow's biography, which presents this portrait of an immigrant who dedicates his entire life to building a strong nation, which is, you know, the country that we live in. And I think that what we're seeing is a tipping point in our society where progressives especially are really interested in maintaining this idea of having this strong nation without abandoning any of the ideals that drove us to enact the American Revolution in the first place. We're still looking for independence. We're still looking, you know. So Lin-Manuel Miranda takes this idea and he turns it into a story about people of color. What happens if we flip the game? What happens if we turn the expectations on their heads and we say the disenfranchised people are the people in power and the minorities are the people in power? How does looking at history through a different lens make it more immediate and more important again? Because I think that, you know, the American Revolution is something we're fed as, you know, middle school students, and not very many of us are super inspired by it. It's this dry set of facts, and he's really made it personal again. And I think that it speaks to a lot of people, and it speaks to a really specific subset of people. Young people want to be engaged. They want to be part of a greater process again. And I think that that's why we're seeing it have such resonance right now.
What is your intention to go see it?
Oh gosh, I really wish. Unfortunately, tickets are ridiculously, ridiculously expensive right now. Actually, I have a friend in New York City, and I sent her with the express purpose of going to see it for me. And and she said it's sold out through January, and seats are hundreds and hundreds of hundreds of dollars right now. So it will be going on tour shortly, and hopefully when it goes on tour, they'll be doing the same thing on tour that they do for the Broadway show, which is they reserve a row of seats at each one of the shows that you can enter a lottery and you get discount tickets, because one of the playwright's other tenets is that art deserves to be seen by everyone, not just the fortunate. And so anyone has the ability to enter the lottery and win the chance at a ticket for an enormously discounted price. I think the current price for one of the lottery seats is like $12 or $15.
Do you intend to leverage your friends and any other person who doesn't intend to see the play to perhaps give you more chances?
I'm hoping that when it goes on national tour, that I'll be able to drop my whole life and go see it in whatever city is nearest. But my brush with greatness right now is that the intern that is working on the current production that I'm working on, her husband's mentor is working on Hamilton in New York City right now. And so they're going to go see it this summer. And so maybe I can get her to, I don't know, yes, take a picture of the front doors or something.
No, I think you have more of a chance to get in somehow.
Yeah.
Backstage, perhaps. Let's jump to talk about what you have going on here in Sitka right now. So tell us about the musical.
So, like I said, I'm working on a production. It's called the 25th Annual Putnam County Spelling Bee. And it is, as you can guess, a musical production about a middle school spelling bee. And it's exciting to me for a couple of reasons. Number one is because it's the first musical that will be produced by community theater here in Sitka. And as far as I can tell, about 15 or 16 years. Number two is that I find it enormously funny, the play itself. And I'm getting to work with a very, very talented professional group of actors. And I've never directed a musical before, so it's fun for me too. It's a little bit of a learning curve.
Can you talk about how the musical was chosen? I had the chance to sit in on one of your practices when you were missing. Some sort of sporting event was going on in the world, and I got to read a part, and I realized in reading the part that I had no idea who my character was until I was at the end of the script. And that it seemed to me like a hard format to read and understand. Maybe you can talk about that a little bit.
Well, sure. So the way that you often choose play scripts, it is reading a play can be difficult because there's no context. It's all dialogue. And often the only context that you're given is by a narrator, if you have one, which more often than not, especially in modern plays, you don't have a narrator. So a lot of times you have to pick up. It literally is you're picking up just lines on a page. There's no paragraphs. There's no setting. There's no you kind of have to be able to pull that from nothing. So usually the way that it works with a play is that whoever is in charge of choosing a play will read a synopsis. And it might be one play or it might be a dozen plays. And then you would get a group of people together and say, hey, let's read 10 or 15 or 30 pages of this out loud at something called a table read. So everyone sits down, you kind of assign parts, and then you get a feel for how it will sound, how it will scan by reading it aloud, generally speaking.
Do you often sit and maybe discuss, like, I didn't understand my character at all, and I was trying to understand, and it would have been helpful if I'd been able to throw it out to everybody at the practice and say, tell me about this. Who is my character? She seemed to be the coordinator of the spelling bee.
Sure. You were reading Rona.
And, yes, Rona.
She is. She's actually more like a color commentator. I don't know if you guys have ever been to a spelling bee. I understand there's one that's held actually here in Sitka every May.
Through the library.
Through the library. I didn't know if I was allowed to say that. Through the library. It's amazing. So you have a couple of readers. And they pronounce the words, they give you definition, they give you a sentence, and then they're not really judges, but it's their job to make sure that the words are spelled correctly and to keep contestants in or let them go as is necessary. And so Rona is one of our spellers, one of our pronouncers, rather. And so there's usually a little short description right at the beginning of each of the characters saying this is what it is, but it's up to the actor generally to interpret how the character, the nuance that the character has.
I noticed that it was an early practice, and I noticed that three or four people had already sort of defined the character and had voices going and had a lot of humor going, and others were struggling a little bit to try to figure that out. What do you think about this musical that is going to be bringing those Sitkins in droves? And I have to say, I thought it was hilarious.
I am so excited. This is, it's so, first of all, it's very funny. And a lot of the humor comes from, we get to do this thing that you don't get to do very often in plays, which is to interact with the audience directly and to break the fourth wall and to speak out to the people that are watching you back. That's not something that often happens with plays. And so much of the humor comes from that sort of intimacy with the audience that we don't normally see. So I'm very excited about that. And also because adolescents are inherently humorous to me.
One last question about the musical, and then we'll go on to the other reading that you're doing. Do you have anybody new to town, a newly found talent that will be performing in the musical?
Well, just maybe people that you wouldn't expect to see in context. One of our performers works for Fine Arts Camp, but she hasn't had a chance to be on stage here in Sitka before, Jessica, and she has just been a marvel to work with. It's an unusual situation that we're in that each of our actors this time actually has extensive stage training in one way or another, which it might be the first time they've ever done a community theater play where that was the case. Jess is the exception. She has a good deal, but not years and years and years and years of experience, which everyone else that will be on stage has actually trained in one form or another to be up there. So,
well, we're taping right now in Studio Zeno, and I hope that this will air before your performance, but perhaps this is a chance, if that's the case, to tell when the musical is, what times, and to give a little shout out to the musical.
Sure. So it's going to be at the Performing Arts Center at Sitka High School on April 9th, 10th, and 11th. Pardon me. So April 9th and 10th, that's Friday and Saturday at 7 p.m. And April 11th, that's a Sunday at 5 p.m. And I actually don't know the ticket prices because I have a producer, so I don't remember any of that stuff. But the tickets will be on sale at Old Harbor and the Sentinel and the usual places.
Well,
and at the door.
For anyone who tuned in late, this is Carrie Sagal in KCAW Raven Radio. My guest today on the Library Show is Sotera Perez, who's talked about a biography of Hamilton that she's been reading, about the musical Hamilton currently playing on Broadway, and she's going to talk about a couple other books that she's reading right now at the same time. What other books are you reading?
So I am reading the second in a trilogy by a writer named Elizabeth Baer. The trilogy is called The Range of Ghosts, and the second book, I believe, is called The Temple of the Steels. It's a speculative fiction book, so it's a little sword and sorcery, but the thing that I really like about it is that Elizabeth Baer has created this sort of alternative Asia, as a continent Asia, and all of the characters in the book are very obviously people of color. So there is a culture which is very similar to the ancient Mongols. There is a culture which resembles very closely the Han Dynasty in central China. There is a kind of faux Persian culture, and it's all woven together with languages that are built on these actual ancient languages and belief systems that are based on the appropriate indigenous peoples. It's really, really cool, and her writing is very engaging.
Is it a pretty hefty novel?
Oh, no. It's fantasy, really, and so it's not difficult reading at all. There's some complex themes in there, some playing with gender identity and the idea of culture being something that you create as opposed to something that you live within. But I wouldn't say that it's not difficult reading.
Is there a character that you're following more than you follow other characters?
Yes, actually. So the main character, there are two characters. One of them is a wizard who was the empress of the sort of Han Dynasty analog, and her name is Samarkar, and she has joined forces with this young man whose name is Timur, who is the last surviving male son of this horse clan that lives on the steppes. His grandfather was the Khan, and so he's very reluctant to take over the Khaganate, and she is sort of helping him gather up his people and reclaim his lands.
Sounds very good. So speculative fiction I have gathered from being in the back door within earshot of you as you talk to coworkers and patrons in the morning. I've gathered that's a favorite of yours.
Speculative fiction is probably the thing that I read more than anything else.
Now, when you were a kid, was that true also?
Absolutely.
Okay, tell me about what you read as a teenager.
As a teenager, it all started because I read The Hobbit when I was in fourth grade. And I think that that's true of a lot of kids who fall into really loving science fiction and fantasy and horror and alternate reality. They find one book, and it's often Tolkien, and it just leads them on this path. And by the time that I was in high school, I had read all of the Lord of the Rings as well as the Silmarillion. I was a huge David Eddings fan.
And who is David Eddings?
David Eddings wrote several series of books in a single universe. The series that I remember reading the most was the Belgariad. There's a character called Belgarion who is a farm boy who finds out that he's a king, just like, you know, that sort of Joseph Campbell mythic journey. So I read a lot of David Eddings. Same thing with Terry Brooks. He wrote a series called Shannara. And it's, again, sort of the same thing. There's a magic sword. They go on epic adventures. Sometimes there's dragons.
Now, which of the books that you read as a child were you most eager to share with your own children when they got to an age that you thought they'd appreciate it, or the age that you thought, I'm going to read it to them anyway because I want to?
So with my son, I think the thing that I really was very excited about was reading Winnie the Pooh with him. It was the first time since he was my first child, I got a chance to read out loud like that for the first time. And Winnie the Pooh there are just so many lessons in it that I was really excited to share. But by the time that my daughter came around, I was ready to share the things that I really, really loved. And so we read The Hobbit together when she was in third grade. And, every single night we would finish our sort of reading allotment for the night, and she would say, just one more chapter, just one more chapter, just one more chapter. And so seeing her come to love those same things that I did and to find the same excitement and identification in those characters was really marvelous for me.
Are able to reel off. I am so impressed with all this information about Hamilton. I'm going to put you on the spot.
Okay.
A favorite quotation or two from Winnie the Pooh.
I really like, there is a point where Pooh says, I wonder what it is that Piglet is doing today. Whatever it is, I wish that I was there doing it with him.
Oh, very sweet. Very, very sweet.
Yeah. I really like that one. And I really also like, where are you going, Pooh? We're going on an expedition.
I only read Winnie the Pooh much later, like within the last 2 or 3 years. And I learned what I was missing all those years, because it is so tenderhearted and filled with wonderful thoughts and quotations.
Mm-hmm.
What else are you reading?
So I am just about, I have another friend who is a Jane Austen fan, and I am also a Jane Austen fan, and she's rereading Sense and Sensibility, and so I think that I am about to re-embark on Sense and Sensibility. My goal this winter, actually, was to reread Jane Eyre. And I was going to reread it because I was reading Why Sargasso Sea, and I wanted to read them in tandem because they're about each other. And then I found out that I just don't like the Brontes very much. It's all very gothic and overblown, and And so what I came to realize is that it's a little humorless, that Jane Eyre in particular feels a little humorless. And I really needed to reread some Jane Austen to remind myself that even 200 years ago, women had a sense of humor.
So not that anyone in North America who's gone to the movies or seen popular books in the last 20 years doesn't know something about Jane Eyre. Maybe you could share a little bit about what is Sense and Sensibility.
So Sense and Sensibility is the story of two sisters who, with their widowed mother, they're being turned out of their family home. Their father died without male issue, and so some cousin is going to take it over, and they're being put out into the street. And one of the sisters, Eleanor, the older sister, is very logical and very reasonable and very sane. And Marianne, who is the younger sister, is ruled by emotion. And the overarching theme of the book is, which of these two things should we let rule our lives? Is it emotion or is it reason that's ultimately should drive our decisions? And in the end, you come away from it understanding that what Austen wanted us as a reader to understand is that you can't have one without the other. You can't make decisions purely based on emotion or purely based on reason. And that there has to be sort of a measure of balance, really. But it also is the story of two sisters who just bicker all the time, and I find some joy in that, honestly.
Do you have sibs?
I do. I have two sisters, two older sisters.
And where are they in the world?
They live in Minnesota.
Okay. Yeah. I'm going to share a book that I read. It's a graphic novel by Charlene Harris, and I only noticed the name on the book very much later after I'd read this graphic novel and enjoyed it. And I sort of have this impression of Charlene Harris as someone who writes vampire love fiction set in the South or something. But this story is about a girl who's dropped off at a cemetery, seemingly dead, dumped out of the trunk of a car. She isn't dead. She wakes up. She's not certain when she wakes up whether she is alive or not. And her near-death experience has created a certain few powers that she has. She's afraid that people are out to get her, so she decides to live in the cemetery. There is also another person living in the cemetery, a caretaker, who becomes aware that somebody is creeping around at night, but they form sort of a friendship. She steals food from him. He's aware that it's going on. She saves his life. But one night, in the cemetery, a gang of kids come in, teenagers, and something goes very wrong, and a girl is murdered. She witnesses it, retrieves the girl's cell phone, and continues to hide in the cemetery. But all the while, she's aware that people are chasing her, want to find her. She needs to make sure they don't know she's alive, and then she's going to attempt to solve the mystery or bring justice for the girl who's buried in the cemetery. And the cell phone's going to play a part in that the girl recorded her final moments, and the girl's mother keeps texting her, asking her where she is. So it was a very good book. I got it at the local comic book store. So it's a book I would recommend to everyone. We're sort of nearing our end here. Perhaps you could briefly remind us of the books you talked about.
Sure. Rob Chernow's Alexander Hamilton and Elizabeth Baer's Range of Ghosts series, as well as the timeless Sense and Sensibility by Jane Austen.
Carrie Sagal, KCAW. I spoke about Cemetery Girl by Charlene Harris. Tune in next time when we'll again be talking about books.